Ray and I are both hand sanitizing. We should have done a ritual. Yes. It's kind of like baptism or something, isn't it? Yeah, that was beautiful. Thank you, Ray. Really wonderful. And it's a wonderful reading from Hugh and a beautiful prayer from Susan. So we're off to a good start. Let's see what I have to say. Okay. All right. So the talk title this morning is A Life That Matters, Guaranteed. And the reason that I chose this title is that I'm not sure if this happens to you, but sometimes I feel like, you know, I'm working hard to make things shift in the church or shift in my own personal life or shift with my family. And sometimes it just feels like I'm overcome with a sense of futility. Futility, just in case you didn't get that. By futility, I mean futility. I mean a feeling of hopelessness. Now, I have to say, it doesn't happen very often, and I think I have personally found an antidote to that, which I'll share with you today. But it is a thing, and certainly right now, in terms of this pandemic, and we're starting to make steps to kind of piece the church back together and see what it will look like as we start coming back, as more and more people are vaccinated, and as the numbers keep going down. And there are days when I say, I don't know what to do. I do know that God knows, but I don't know what to do. And I'm in touch with my flawed humanity, and sometimes it just feels futile. I hope I'm not the only one. Okay, good to know. Okay, all right. Then I was thinking about, you know, today is Palm Sunday, and I think most of you know the plot, so I'm not going to go into it. This is not going to be your typical Palm Sunday service. It's also Passover. Passover started a couple days ago, I think you know the plot of that, too. If you don't, there's a movie about both of those topics, so feel free just to watch the movie in your spare time. But, you know, I was thinking about Moses and Jesus as these great figures that we honor. And then I was thinking about their lives, and I like to think of like Moses going for a job interview, and he comes in, and the interviewer is looking at his permanent record. Remember your permanent record? Like if you would be late for school in second grade, they say this is going on your permanent record. And I always thought that permanent record would follow me into my 90s. I don't know if it has or not, because permanent is permanent, people. Okay, anyway. So they're looking at Moses' permanent record, and they say, oh, well, I see you you killed somebody, and then you ran away, and then God appeared to you in a burning bush, and you said no a couple of times, and you said you couldn't do it. And then you said yes, finally, because God said he would help you, and Brother Aaron jumped into the mix, and you came back to Egypt, and then you were not very cooperative or diplomatic. There were all of those plagues, Moses. There was like frogs and boils and cattle blight and a complete dearth of toilet paper. And oh wait, wrong plague. I'm getting my plagues mixed up. That was this plague. And then okay, success story. You got the Hebrew people out of Egypt. And by the way, Moses, how long did it take you to actually get to the promised land? 40 years. And you yourself didn't actually get there, did you? Okay. We'll call you. And then the interviewer says, next, and Jesus comes in wearing a clip-on tie and carrying a briefcase. And and the interviewer says to Jesus, so Jesus, let's look at your permanent record. I see that you kind of lived with your mother until you were 30. Okay, nothing wrong with that. But your ministry lasted how long? Oh, 3 years. Uh-huh. And there was a lot of betrayal, and you kind of hung out with a rough crowd, I see here. Tax collectors and sinners and prostitutes, and you did a lot to disrupt the status quo, and I'm not sure if we're looking for that in this particular company. And then again, Jesus, how did your ministry end? Oh. A bunch of people betrayed you and killed you. Again, we'll call you. So you see that everybody's a flawed human being. Everybody has moments of doubts. Probably everybody in that choir loft up there, with the exception of Yoda, who's behind Todd over there, they probably all are flawed human beings to a certain extent, as are we. But even with all of that, I know that our lives matter. I absolutely know that our lives matter, or we would not be here. So today we are looking at how to guarantee that your life will matter. And it's really easy because it already does. I already gave you the punchline, but it already does matter. But how to guarantee that you know that your life matters. I'm hoping by the time we leave here today that everybody will know how much their life matters, not only to themselves, our lives matter to ourselves, but on a global, universal scale. Okay? So this is one of my secret weapons in terms of knowing that my life matters, and that is to turn to the true nature of my being in all things. You know, it sounds so simple, and it's not as simple as it sounds, but it really is simple. It's both simple and complex at the same time. You know, what gets in the way is that sometimes we don't know the true nature of our being. And I realize I talk about this every Sunday. I talk about this almost every Sunday, that what is our true nature? I remember a while back, years ago, it was early on in this ministry, when I referred to myself as Bonnie One Note. You know that? Anybody know that song? And I remember with the congregation, I sang the first line, "Bonnie can only sing one note, and the note she sings is this." And then there was this dead silence, and this one little lone voice coming from the back of the church goes, "Reverend Bonnie, we don't know that song." Now, I could do my trick of getting Alexa to play it for the world, but I'm hoping that joke isn't getting old because I'm still really enjoying it. Just for those of you who have not been here recently, I will say from this stage, "Alexa, play blah, 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 blah." And all of the Alexas in Ventura County start playing, and it's super fun for me, perhaps annoying for those who are with the Alexa. But anyway, if I am Bonnie One Note, and by the way, does anybody know? Let's try it. "Bonnie can only sing one note, and the note she sings is this." Good job, you did it. Oh, okay. If you want to listen to it, Ella Fitzgerald has an awesome recording of it. Yes. So anyway, where was I going with this? It was super fun for me. I think I'm done now. I can go. No, I'm kidding. So the one note is to understand our true being and to understand our oneness with God. That's really all there is to know. God is I am. That is all there is to know. You know, and I keep looking for different ways to explain that because, you know, I shared a couple weeks ago, as Cynthia Bourgeois says, trying to understand our divine nature is like taking an Underwood typewriter and asking it to get on the internet. Okay, we just don't have the software to do it, but we have glimpses of it, and we have the heart to understand our true nature, and we have the most importantly the experience to do it, and we also have these great teachers that can guide us in those directions, and different phraseology will register for different people. One of the teachers I've been listening to over the years, but more in depth recently, is James Finley. James Finley is a psychologist and a mystic, a mystical teacher who studied Thomas Merton. He also works closely with Richard Rohr. And I was listening to a podcast of his the other day, and this guy talks about deep spiritual principles like he is ordering breakfast at Denny's. I mean, he just goes, yeah, I'll have the Grand Slam and the you know, whatever. And it goes by so fast, and this one I had to stop it and play it several times and write it down. This is paraphrased to make sense in this context, but I want to read what he said about the nature of our being. James Finley said, "God creates you and makes you in real time and space. But there is a you that has never been born and will never die. It is a divine identity. The divine identity is a divine capacity that is realized by living it. You are like an infinite zero, pregnant with God." Oh, I love that. "God then endows the person that you are, the birthless, deathless presence, with a human nature. The most important capacity of the human nature is the capacity to recognize our true nature. I can intimately realize that through the generosity of God, that I am a capacity for God, which is a capacity for love. Experience awakens divine capacity. So our living awakens divine capacity. In the awakening, I say yes to my divine capacity. I say yes to love, for love is never imposed. It is always only offered. We have to say yes to it. I awaken to this love that gives itself to me, and then I respond by giving myself in love to the love that gives itself to me. I'm going to read that again because I like it so much. I respond by giving myself in love to the love that gives itself to me. Yeah. In the reciprocity of love, my destiny is fulfilled on this earth. This love identity is woven into our love for each other. And here's where it gets really specific and easy for us. Believe it or not, it gets easy for us. You didn't understand any of this. This is the part to get. This love identity is woven into our love for each other. We are siblings of the infinite. We are brothers and sisters of infinite love. So we experience the love of God in our love for all. You hear that? We are brothers and sisters of infinite. You know, and by the infinite, you know, and he says we're brothers and sisters of God, brothers and sisters of the infinite. By the infinite and by the term brothers and sisters, I always think back to St. Francis. St. Francis, who's right, there he is, right behind me. St. Francis, who referred to brother sun and sister moon. And we've got brother caterpillar and brother bumblebee and sister sand. And brother building, all of these things, sister rock, everybody. No, okay. all of these things, everything in the manifest world is our brother and sister. It is the brother and sister of the infinite. And the way that we express, the way that we embody this knowing is to love and to serve our brothers and sisters, which is everything. Oh. Now, here's the other part that is so cool. As we serve anything, we serve everything. I'm going to turn to the teachings of Jesus. As you know, Jesus was a rabbi, and he was quoting the Torah much of the time, or quoting the Old Testament scriptures. And one of the scriptures that he says is the great commandment, which is love God, love your neighbor, as you love yourself. Now take that second part. I listened to this in a CD by Cynthia Bourgeau recently, where she says, you know, where Jesus says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. And it's thrown in there with love God as well, right? So when I was growing up, when I was raised in a Christian household, and even as an adult until recently, I thought, okay, there's three things I got to love. Over here, I'm going to love God, okay? He says that's like the first commandment. Okay, now I'm going to love my neighbor over here. And then maybe if I have time, I'll love myself over here, right? Love God, check. Love neighbor, check. Love self, check. Love your neighbor as you love yourself is one of the few verses in the Bible that I think is to be taken literally. As you love your neighbor, you are loving yourself. As you are loving yourself, you are loving your neighbor. As you are loving anything, you are loving infinite God, because it's all one. It's all one. This is a statement about wholeness. This is a statement that Christ or God or the infinite intimate is another name for everything. And it's not separated by anything. It is not separated by anything. As you love your neighbor, as you love yourself, as you love God, you are loving all three and beyond. It is like dropping a pebble in a pond where the ripples go outward and outward and outward and outward in an infinite pond. So if we're concerned about this, our small actions being futile, we can let that go. We know that as we do a small action in the intention of love, in the intention of goodness, in the intention to spread kindness, that is not only loving the person that we are being to whom we are being kind, that is loving ourselves, it is loving God, it is loving all of creation at the same time. Does that make sense? I hope so. Okay. The other thing, the other scriptural passage that I want to talk about is one of my favorites. It often makes me cry. And it's funny because I came upon this not from, I would say, a spiritual source. You know, I'm listening to all these mystics on podcasts and stuff. But in one of the services where I set off a bunch of Alexas, I talked about my love for Ethel Merman, Ethel Merman, as Alexa calls her, Ethel Merman. She also can't say Sir Mix-a-Lot. She calls him Sir Mix-a-Lot. I love Alexa. Anyway, I was getting really interested in shuffling songs by Ethel Merman, and and I got interested enough of her that I decided to read a biography about her. But while I was looking for biographies about Ethel Merman, I found that there was a biography about Ethel Merman and Mother Teresa. What? One of these things is not like the other, you know? But it was written by this guy, Tony Cointreau is his name. His originally Jacques Cointreau from this liqueur family, this big liqueur family in France, and they lived in America, though. And it's a long story, but he had kind of a challenging relationship with his parents, so he had several surrogate mothers that were really kind to him. One of them was Ethel Merman, and the other one was Mother Teresa. You can imagine that. It's kind of crazy, kind of just like synchronicity, phenomenal. He worked with, Mother Teresa had a center in New York for people with AIDS, and he worked there with her, and they became very close friends. In fact, super close friends. And he said in this book that she would often come up to him and take his hand and with five fingers and go, "You did it to me. You did it to me." Now that's not an accusation, that is quoting the Bible. I'm gonna read the quote, okay? The quote is, what do I do with my quote? Underneath, there it is. There's Mr. Quote, okay. All right, so this is the quote. "For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him saying, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked or clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?' And Jesus will answer them, 'Truly, I say to you, as you did this to one of the least of my brethren, you did it to me.'" Okay? It's the same principle that I was talking about before with love your neighbor as you love yourself. If we help anybody, if we clothe anybody, if we feed anybody, if we smile at anybody, if we hug at a distance from anybody, if we wear our masks like we're supposed to, if we maintain social distancing, if we share, if we do anything that is kind, again, I used to think it was, okay, I've just served Jesus now. But Jesus, Christ, is another name for everything. You know, they had to put a face to this principle, but Christ is the principle, and Christ is another name for everything. As we serve one person, as we clothe one person, as we feed one person, as we help one person, as we show up in our spiritual center and run the sound or do a children's message or do a reading or do stage management or direct a choir or do tech stuff or whatever it is that everybody does, music, I'm leaving somebody out, but I don't care, it's okay. As we do any of those things, we are blessing the whole. It's not just about serving at this center. As we serve at this center, we serve the whole. And we are serving the whole. It's a like a quantum physics fact called non-locality, that there something can happen over here and some a change can happen over here without an electron crossing in the intervening space. Right? You got that? It's important. I want you to remember that. There's gonna be a test on it after. No, I'm kidding. Okay, it's gonna go in your permanent record if you I was trying to think what it's like, you know, and I was thinking, I often turn to physiology, one of my first Bibles, and think about, like, okay, next Sunday, just so you know, we're going to have a horse and a donkey on the stage because it's Easter, and I want it, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking about wearing open-toed shoes. not always a good idea. But like if a horse steps on my foot, okay, it affects my whole body, right? Because it's the pain, you feel the pain in your foot, but the feeling of the pain in your foot is really happening in your brain. It's so fascinating to me that the brain doesn't have any pain receptors, but the pain has pain. The brain has pain reception. The pain in brain is merely on the whatever. It's very hard to explain. There you go. That's right. Yeah. So it's like that, though. You know what? And think about a foot massage. Let's go move away from a painful stimulus. Think about a foot massage. How that can make you fall asleep. Anybody here ever fallen asleep from a foot massage? Right. You know, it can make you fall asleep because you've become so relaxed. So just touching your feet affects the whole body. And I think that's what, like, the body of God, the body of Christ, the body of the world, the body of the infinite intimate is. It's we affect it, we massage it in one place, and the whole thing relaxes. The whole thing is infused with love. And so that's it, folks. That's the message. That's my secret weapon to know that my life matters. Now, you have to remember it, because I don't always remember it. But the first thing is to recognize our true nature, that we are that infinite capacity for God, and that the second thing is to realize that capacity. And the way that we realize, which means make it real, is to be like God is, which is to be pure love, and then to understand that our love in this place, right here, right now, wherever we are, whether it's the church, whether it's your home, whether it's your relationship, whether you're in the grocery store, whether you're at the post office, whether you're waiting in line, whether you're in traffic, our capacity to realize, to affirm, to evolve love in that moment has an effect on the whole. It's like massaging somebody's feet, okay? It's kind of gross. I don't really like, okay, never mind. It's what I want you to think about is, what if everybody did that? You know, we're so inundated with all of the bad news that's happening. There's very, very little, space on the airwaves around us, on the airwaves in relationships, on the airwaves on the news media, in the paper. There's very little space for good news. But what if there could be a revolution? And that all of us who know, that's all of us here today listening to this, and many other people all over the world, because we're not the only ones preaching this message. That's right. What if we were all to know that the small things that we do make a difference? Okay? The small things that we do encourage and support and love everybody. One of the most important words in that sentence is small. If we focus on the small and do small things, pretty soon those things become mighty. So my prayer for all of us today, is that we discover what we love to do, how we love to serve, to do that in small, infinite ways, and then just keep doing it and watch the world change, watch the love grow, because there is only one of us here, and as we love one of us, we love all of us. Let's pray. And so it is. Thank you, Ray. Thank you.